Advanced Studio Classroom is on the air. This is your advanced time, so join us for our window on the world as we look at women in the auto industry the second day. Everyone.
Hello.
Hi. How are you today?
We're doing well.
Great. Happy to be here.
Bill, greet our audience out there.
Yeah. Nice to see everybody, or actually be talking with everybody, not seeing them. This is Bill, and Amanda's here also in the house.
I am. I decided to come back.
Well, that's good, Amanda, because we need women for this. It's about women in the auto industry. But, you know, I think women have always had a different role in society through the years because of the fact that they have to take a lot of time having babies.
That's right. It does take a lot of time and a lot of energy as well. So it can determine what kind of occupation they choose.
Yeah. That's Bill, before World War II, women didn't work out as much. But then World War II, when the guys had to go overseas, they needed women to drive the buses. So that's when started to be more women, I think, in industry.
Yeah, it's funny. We even talk about the automotive industry because during World War II, a lot of women did have to go work in the automobile factories in Detroit because so many of the men did go overseas. And so they worked in many heavy industries during World War II,
well,
and that actually, you know, it didn't, you know, force all the women into working, but it did open up the door, hey, of capability, so they can do this.
You know what my sister did in World War II? She's 10 years older than me. I was young to be in all that, but she flew the planes over to England for the fighters and people to use because they didn't have enough personnel, so they had women ferrying planes over to England to be used in the war.
Wow.
That was a pretty interesting job for a woman.
Very interesting.
What's that for? Were they being made at Boeing?
Well, I don't know where they were all made. They were probably made a lot of different places.
Yeah.
But, no, the job, she was in an Air Force thing for women.
Oh, okay, okay. I thought she might have been working for one of the manufacturers for Boeing.
No, but she did engineering, too.
Yeah. See, that's, you know, that's a field. We're talking about automotive industry, but you're talking about aeronautical.
She did automotive industry, too, because my father was a mechanic, and she had to work with the boys and learn how to repair cars. But I was too young to do that.
Did you learn how to repair cars?
I stayed home and cooked with my mother. They had to eat, too, you know. That's why I like cooking better. What about you, Amanda? Did you do any of those kind of jobs when you were little?
Well, no. My dad is a carpenter, so I did try to, you know, do that for a little while, but I wasn't very good at it. So I'm also the oldest, and I looked after my brothers and sisters a lot, so I, too, would cook in the kitchen a lot.
See, so, you know, women have to feed these men sometimes. That's a job, right? But there's a lot of other jobs for women besides that, Bill. But, Bill, you don't mind having a good women's cooking now and then, do you?
No, it's no. Yeah,
nothing
I like
wrong
that
with that.
Very much,
but
I mean, I cook too.
Right? You
know?
Cooking.
I'm multifaceted.
You know, but you know, women do other things too. It's not that they only do that. You know, and some men are pretty good cooks too, so that's okay.
That's right.
Yeah, but let's talk about hiring and training about the women. We're talking about women are a rarity in some industries, and the auto industry is one of them.
That's right. The auto industry does have a lack of women. It stayed at 5% for a long time. And so we're going to learn, I think, just in today's article, just what they're doing about that.
Right. And we're going to be on page 43 today. And that's where we're going to start.
Well, I find this interesting, Doris, in that talking about women in the automotive industry. And we had done an article last August about women breaking through the glass ceiling in the corporate world. And one of the women we highlighted in that article was Mary Barra. And she was general manager and vice president of new car and truck development for General Motors, and she actually was the very first woman put up in that high of a position. And she was kind of a rarity, too.
So we're going to find out about other people today. Let's get reading now the first column on page 43.
Hiring and training. Automakers and others are trying to address the problem. Betsy Humsher, dean of students at Kettering University in Flint, Michigan, says, if you added up all the money the top 10 automakers have spent on hiring women, training them, and grooming them for advancement, I wouldn't be surprised if it was in the billions. Yet, there are still roadblocks to women entering the field. It remains a fairly hostile environment for women, especially on the plant floor as women start out their careers, Homscher says. Bowler Davis, 43, had some convincing to do when she took over as plant manager, first at plants in Lansing, Michigan and Arlington, Texas, and later at the Orion Assembly and Pontiac stamping plants. Even if they didn't say anything other than, "You look very young," Bowler Davis says it was often clear when outsiders came in for meetings that they were shocked when they saw I was the plant manager.
So automakers and others, there are trying to address the problem, which means that they're just trying to fix it or do something about it.
That's right. And we learn from Betsy Homscher. She is the dean of students at Kettering University mm-hmm. in Flint, Michigan.
That's very well known place.
Yeah, well, actually, this is interesting background to Kettering University. For many, many decades, it actually was known as General Motors Institute. And it was directly linked with General Motors, of course, and this is where their students, it was fully accredited university, their engineering students went there. They specialized in the automotive engineering field. It was a fascinating program, 5-year program, and throughout this they had to do 5 co-ops during this time, 12 weeks each time. So they would alternate between classrooms and the factory. So this was a full study, work, university experience, and by the time they were done, they were well equipped.
That certainly sounds like a good, thorough program. Mm-hmm. It costs a lot of money. And if you hire these women and train them specially and you groom them, it means that you get them ready to practice to do this, to be advancing in the field. It might have cost a lot of money, even billions of dollars. That sounds like a lot to me.
That does. But if Bill's saying, you know, this belonged to General Motors before, then they're actually paying for the education of these engineers as they're coming up.
Yeah, well, that's just there at Kettering University and formerly GMI. But what Betsy Homscher's saying in that sentence, Doris, what you talked about, she's even saying, look at the top 10 automakers mm-hmm. and what they have spent trying to advance the cause of women in the company. So her point here is that, look, it's not for lack of trying by the companies. The top 10 companies have literally done what they could to make this field attractive. They've spent tons of money.
Right.
So
we're looking at the situation. It's not trying to blame people for doing that, but there are roadblocks, and roadblocks are just things that would be obstacles in the way, things that would keep you from going ahead. So there still are other roadblocks, aren't there?
Which is also quite an interesting term considering we're talking about the auto industry.
Yeah.
We use the word roadblocks.
Roadblocks for the cars, right? Roadblocks in the field of education, right?
That's right.
Yeah. And Homscher, Betsy Homscher, does talk about one in the next paragraph.
That's right. She goes on to say that one of the roadblocks they encounter is that the auto industry remains a fairly hostile environment for women.
So that's kind of unfriendly, really. Hostile just means that they're not too friendly.
Well, hostile, just imagine if you're like even two countries that aren't really friendly with each other, and you cross over the border into that other country,
man.
It would be hostile because the other soldiers might be shooting at you. That's
right.
What you call hostile.
That's pretty bad, yeah.
Well, she gives one example here. On the plant floor, on the factory floor, when young female engineers started their careers. Why is it that way? Look, imagine a 23-year-old engineering graduate, a young lady, comes out of college and is working at an automotive factory in Michigan, and there are 100 grizzled 20-year-old veterans, 50-year-old guys, who have been working in the automotive factory for 20, 30 years. They're all part of the auto workers union, and these guys, like, they eat stones for breakfast. And you can imagine how they're going to treat this young engineer.
They're tough. Mabel's saying they're kind of tough. Yeah, but you know, this Bowler Davis, this lady we talked about at first, she 43 years old, and she had some convincing to do when she took over as a plant manager because, you know, she was 43. She wasn't just out of college. She had a lot of experience, but she had to work at it and let people know she could do her job. She had to convince them.
That's right. This is just sharing her experience as she took over as plant manager, and not just in one plant, but in several plants, first at Lansing, then Michigan, and then Arlington, Texas. And later at Orion Assembly and Pontiac Stamping Plants. So she encountered having to convince people on the factory floor many times.
Hey, by the way, Bill, what is a stamping plant?
I'm glad you asked me that, Doris. That's actually where they take the sheet metal and they actually stamp it with the forms that create the panels that are going on the outside and also the inside metal forms of the car that gives it shape.
Aren't you impressed that Bill knew that?
Bill knows a lot, Doris.
About cars. He's a man. That's what he's engineering thing.
You know why? Right. My best friend actually went to GMI. I've actually been to this Kettering University and General Motors Institute, and I actually took a couple tours of some General Motors plants many years ago.
Bill, I'd like to tell you this with Heavenly Melody Choir. We went to Stuttgart, and we went through the Mercedes factory.
Yeah, I'd love to do that.
That
was fascinating to see that stuff.
Stuttgart, Germany, I'm telling you.
Wow.
You ought to do that. Women like to look at those things too, don't they?
I do, yeah. I like
that.
Anything to do with machines.
You know? But it's good to see some of the things they do. But what did they say to her? They said, you know, you look very young sort of thing. What do you think?
Well, even if they didn't say anything to her other than she looked very young, she said it was often clear when outsiders came in for meetings that they were shocked when they saw her. So their body language told her.
This is our plant manager. Oh, the plant manager. It was a surprise.
Well, yeah. When outsiders came in and they're meeting her, normally they're expecting to meet some 50-year-old guy looks, you know,
she
like somebody
43. Come on, give her
and they
a
meet this, you know, this woman, and they're like, huh, what is this? And part of the problem with that is then, and again, this goes back to the stereotypes, then part of the problem is then people start making assumptions. They think, oh, well, she's not as competent as I think she might be. That is actually what Betsy Homsher is talking about, hostile environment, not just on the plant floor, but in the executive suite where the executives come in from outside, and then they start doubting things.
But, you know, I think some of those things are changing because the way the world has changed so much, and there's so many more young people in charge of startup companies, and they're millionaires when they're 28 and all. And I think the last 10, 15 years, a lot of those stereotypes have changed.
Right. They have been broken, haven't they? Those roadblocks are starting to come down.
Right, because there's more
changing.
Young people
some
doing
people,
stuff. Right.
Some people would walk in and accept that and say, okay, fine. Some people would walk in and have a problem with her.
Yeah, they might have a problem if you're too old and say, how come you got all these old people working here now? Because there's a lot of young people in industry right now. You see it all the time.
Yeah. She deserves a lot of credit as far as having the character to stand up in situations where maybe she probably wasn't treated as well as maybe she deserved to be treated.
Those were in the old days, you know, but maybe it's changed. Let's find out about this emotion in the workplace. That's kind of an emotional subject you're talking about, Bill, right? Let's get down to this emotion in the workplace and see how important it is.
Yes, it
let's
is.
Read the next section.
Emotion in the workplace. While she acknowledges the plant environment can be intimidating for women engineers, Bowler Davis says she learned to focus on what she and her mostly male colleagues had in common rather than their differences. I'm very emotional in my personal life, not so much in my work life, says Bowler Davis. But for some women, that emotional connection, especially in the workplace, is what they crave. A number of women have drifted away from automotive engineering jobs in plants because they found they desired jobs that allowed for more interaction with others, Homsher says. If you spend all your time working on engineering a door your level of satisfaction may be considerably less than if you work in HR, human resources, and develop a policy that allows working professionals to job share so they can raise their children.
So we're talking about this plant environment, and it can be intimidating. When things are intimidating, it means that they're a little bit fearful.
That's right, and that's what Bowler Davis encountered when she was working on the plant floor of different audio industry factories. She said that she acknowledges that it can be intimidating for women engineers.
That's what Bill was talking about. You know,
right.
For the younger ones coming in, Bill, it was kind of intimidating for them.
Right.
It would take somebody several years to really master that situation and learn how to deal with it. And I'll tell you what, that goes for even if you're a young man, too. Young
yeah, that's
woman,
true.
Young man
right.
In an automotive engineering
field. Just out of
field,
school, you don't
it's
know
It's
going to
be
anything.
Rough. Yeah. You got to earn your stripes because they're going to be people are going to be skeptical.
But you know what? She learned something very important, and I think you should underline this. She said what you should focus on. What did she say you should focus on?
She focused on what she had in common with her mostly male colleagues, so the things that they understood together rather than their differences. And I can relate to that because actually being a female police officer, I worked with a lot of male police officers. Sometimes
right.
I was the only female on the
team. Didn't they sometimes wonder, you know, about the being women on the force? Was there some talk?
Sometimes. Some of the older people did because they hadn't encountered that as often. But I do agree that when you try to focus on what you have in common with them and you converse with them about that and joke with them about that, it really does break down a lot of those roadblocks.
You know, I think that's great advice for everybody. You should underline that with a bright pencil, maybe a yellow pencil, because it says, focus on what you have in common with people rather than differences. Mm-hmm. This goes for ethnic groups, nationalities, your grandmas and the grandchildren, or whatever tribe you come from. Focus on what you have in common. You're all people. You all like to eat. Chinese ought to focus on that, you know. Hey, let's focus on that. We all like to eat, Bill. And say what you have in common instead of what you eat, you know, than the differences.
Mm-hmm. Right. And so she's focusing on this as far as maybe, you know, she would think back to working in the same plants that some of these guys worked in before, maybe on some of the same projects they worked on before,
right.
Some of their mutual experiences.
Well, you know, one thing, I think I have to ask Amanda this because I can't ask Bill this because it's a woman thing. See, this lady says here, she says, I'm very emotional in my personal life, but not so much in my work life. Now, women are supposed to be, or at least known to be, more emotional. Maybe they show it more. Mm. Men keep it inside, okay? Mm-hmm. But Amanda, as a police officer or whatever job you do, do you feel that in your personal life you're a little more emotional, but you don't carry it to your work? When you're in your work, you're not emotional, right?
Definitely. I think you try to be more professional when you're at your work life. I did, being in the police, even though I'm encountering emotional
situations.
Right? I'm the one that's being paid to keep my cool and to try to organize the situation into something. So I think definitely I would be less emotional in my work life.
And whatever it is, whatever you do, you have to leave that at home. If you're a shy person, you have to leave that at home. So when you do your professional job, you don't have your personal emotions, Bill. You shouldn't.
You can't have them affect your work.
Right.
Too much. I mean, it's difficult sometimes to block things out, but you really need to set it aside and just focus on your work as much as you possibly can. Now, that's what Alicia Bowler Davis is talking about here. Now, we see here in that next paragraph on line 8, then we move into, you know, explaining more of, well, for some women, that emotional connection is something they don't want to give up. So.
Mm-hmm. And so they've drifted away from this automotive engineering jobs because they find they would like to do something a little bit different. However, even in the automotive engineering jobs, there's also automotive design. They can still be in the automotive industry and do a lot of other stuff, can't they?
Oh, yeah. There's many, many different fields and specialties that they can work in. We see here that many women drifted away from it because they had craved – the emotional connection with other people. They really desired it strongly.
That wasn't the field to go into.
And they weren't getting it, so they drifted away. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, it doesn't mean you have to leave the industry.
No, no. Yeah. You could just do another type of job there, yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. So, again, if you spend all this time just working on this engineering part, which is the door, then your satisfaction might not be the same as if you work on HR and you say, oh, look at all these good people we have in our company. And maybe you don't see the results as well on engineering as you do in other jobs. What do you think, Bill?
Well, I think what she's saying here is that it's such a narrow focus if you're working in engineering, if you're in making a door for a car. It's such a narrow focus, and you're almost in your own world. Mm-hmm. And you might be working with a couple people on that project. But she's saying, well, you may not be, that may not be as fulfilling, your level of satisfaction. It may not be there compared to what it might be working with a larger group of people.
I think it's interesting, too, that we talk about the word job share. You know, job share is when you divide the duties of one job between two people. And that has become a lot more common, too, over the years, where one job, now two people share. That would also give them satisfaction in their job so that if they have a family, then they can spend time looking after their family as well.
Right. People didn't used to consider the fact that when women had babies, they either quit their job completely to be home, or they would say that, all right, if you have somebody else that does the same job, you can take so many months off or 2 months or whatever. But you have to have somebody do the job, so you share. Well, you can't always do that if you're an engineer.
No.
You say, well, I'm having a baby. You got somebody else come and do your engineering job. It doesn't work so well.
Well, you're right, because sometimes as an engineer, you need to stick with the project from beginning to
right.
end.
That's true.
Somebody can't necessarily come in because there's concepts and designs and things that really they can't pick it up then.
That's true with IT yeah. jobs too. And with,
yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I want to say something too here, this paragraph also. This also has to do with where somebody is in their career.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, if I'm a young engineer, right, I'm a young automotive engineer, male or female, doesn't matter, and I'm given the project of working on a door with another team of engineers, I might be thrilled with that because it's where I am in my career. Whereas Alicia Bowler Davis, at age 43, she's looking for a bigger, broader experience, and that's why she's saying maybe instead of just focusing on designing a door, she's more interested in developing a policy that affects thousands of workers.
Right.
And so, again, it depends on where you are in your career, too.
So there is emotion involved. That's true. But that's not everything involved. But, you know, you cannot say that society is really giving these women a bad deal in a way either, because I think society is trying to take part of these needs. That's why they spend all this money. And there's been efforts to include women, don't you think? Let's read about that, Bill.
Well, there are efforts to include women, plenty of efforts, and we see a sidebar down there on page 43, the bottom right, and the first one we see is Chrysler has a mentoring program that matches women from different parts of the company. The Chrysler Institute of Engineering also matches its new employees with more established sponsors and tries to match women with other women. So
there's one right there. Chrysler has a mentoring program. That's good.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that, just there I want to say sponsors, what they're talking about, established sponsors, those are actually older employees, more experienced employees.
So they match the new employees mm-hmm. with the other people and match women with other women. And I think that's a good program. It's a mentoring program. That's very important, isn't it?
I think it's incredibly important. It will help these young ladies navigate their way through the first couple of years. What happens, actually, in many industries, especially this industry, is that the women, young ladies, might get discouraged within a year or two
right.
and leave the company.
Right.
Turnover rate is the highest within the first year or two, so they're trying to keep them on board. If they can do that, they'll stay for 5 or 10 years.
That's good. Well, what about this next one, number two? Automotive
well, we learned
next.
Automotive Next is part of Inforum, the Midwestern Women's Professional Organization, and they work to recruit and retain women in the auto industry. So they're just very driven in trying to keep people and also draw people to the auto industry.
Well, that's a good idea. But what about Nissan? What are they doing?
Yeah, we see Nissan there, Japanese automotive manufacturer. However, they have many plants in the United States,
they do.
They have increased the number of female engineers in management positions by 50%.
50%,
in the
that's
past
a lot.
3 years. Mm. I'm wondering if that is a United States statistic.
I think so.
Or if it's corporate-wide. I don't know if it's the same
States.
In Japan.
I think it's in the United States.
Maybe there are plants in the United States,
right.
And they have a significant presence there. Well, they just started a sponsorship program that monitors career paths of female engineers it believes have high potential.
High potential means good results.
That's right. Somebody's smart and can do the job.
We might say they've been put on the fast track. That's
mm-hmm.
a typical
term
in the corporate world. You take these people that show promise and you say, well, all right, let's actually steer them in the right direction so we can maybe cultivate that promise.
Well, look at this photo that we have here. What does it say about this girl?
Well, her name is Jean Nay. She's 29 years old. She's a PhD student, so she's doing her doctorate in chemical engineering. And she's testing lithium air batteries in a battery development lab in Detroit, Michigan. That's at Wayne State. And this was taken on February 3rd in 2011.
It looks like Chinese, right?
Yeah. Well, Jean Nay, she's here at Wayne State. That's Wayne State University, mm-hmm. located also in Michigan. It's a great example. Chemical engineering major, but she actually is working in an automotive-related field.
And she's a PhD
developing
student.
Batteries.
Imagine.
A PhD
What does your
student.
Daughter do? She's a PhD student. She's working on cars. Oh, yeah? Well,
yeah.
I don't know.
So, again, this is tremendous thinking outside the box in a non-traditional field, and I think she's got a great future.
Well, remember, you're going to let us know what you think about some of this. You're going to let us know on Facebook, and you're going to be here tomorrow because we have one more day, don't we?
Yes, we do. And this is great. We're going to also find out about some other accomplishments from some other female engineers.
We look forward to seeing you all then, so make sure you come back.
See you then. Goodbye, everyone.
Goodbye. Bye.